Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. Welcome back to Thursday Morning Roundtable for the beginning of our 51st season of TMR. So that's pretty special. I want to remind you also that today, September 10th, is primary day in Onondaga County, at least. So for those of you who are registered party members with various affiliations, don't forget. I think the polls are open noon to 9 maybe. So don't forget about that this afternoon or this evening. So in March and April, when we ended up the spring semester of TMR, we started remembering 50 years back, and we had a number of programs on social and community and economic development issues that kind of mirrored what was going on 50 years ago. And I thought that was fun. Now we're kind of back to our regularly scheduled programs, but again, we'll be touching on all of those issues, social, community, economic development, cultural, and many others. The rest of this month, we'll be talking to a college president, we'll be talking to a hotel owner, and then going forward into the fall, we'll be talking to a couple of new college presidents in the area. We'll be talking about China and economic policy. We will be talking about transportation. We will also, in October, and hopefully you all have gotten your invitations, we'll be taking a little break, and we'll be having a Wednesday morning roundtable, so to speak, and we will be celebrating our 50th anniversary on October 14th with a special breakfast that will be a fundraiser for the Levi L. Smith Scholarship Fund for University College students. And that is something that you all started 25 years ago when TMR was 25 years old. So again, don't forget about that. We're looking for registrations, and feel free to pass along registrations to anybody in the community. This is a community-wide event that will be a breakfast with special guest Charles Blow, the New York Times columnist, in October. So we'll be reminding you about that. There will not be a Thursday morning breakfast that week. So, but lots of interesting programs coming up throughout the fall. As usual, I hope you agree. Today, though, we're really fortunate to have with us the acting director of the New York State Fair, right fresh from his gig at the fair. So I was really, really happy that he was able to make it here today. But to introduce our guest speaker, I'm happy to welcome up TMR member Tony Martin. Tony's the associate director at Catholic Charities. Thanks, Tony.
It's kind of hard to introduce Troy in a way, because unless you live under a rock in Syracuse, New York, you've got to know through enormous print and other media coverage who Troy Woffner is. So I'll give you just a touch on things that you very likely have read over and over again. He's one of us. He grew up in Cazenovia, went to SUNY Morrisville, enjoyed quite a career well before the state fair in New York State government, spending a year with Senator Dave Valesky as his director of policy development, 12 years with Assemblyman Bill McGee, which connected him to agriculture and markets, which of course oversees the New York State Fair. So his lineage is pretty pure for the job that he has today. Troy lives, breathes, and sweats the New York State Fair. He met his wife at the New York State Fair. Okay? She too now, of course, lives, breathes, and sweats the New York State Fair. So a lot of that you already know. But I bring a different perspective. I was honored by being appointed by Governor Cuomo to sit on the New York State Fair Advisory Board a couple years ago. So I came on board as Troy was picking up the reins to drive the fair. And I've watched him work through 2 years and many, many, many board and committee meetings. And this is my observation, is that Troy is very well prepared for whatever role he plays at the fair or pretty much anywhere, because his leadership style is balanced, He's got the most amazing sense of humor under the most trying circumstances imaginable. He listens to people. He asks an awful lot of questions. And under his guidance, in a very short time, the fair straightened out some finances that had been tangled up for decades of confusing ledgers and spreadsheets and notes and post-its, all straightened out now. And for the first time, the fair had a clean audit last year. So would not have happened. Would not have happened without that balanced and kind leadership. He brought on a new team, kept many members of the previous team, and they have really repaid his confidence. Sponsorship for this year's fair, and the board looks at sponsorship just as much as it does the numbers of people that come through the gate. Sponsorship increased 10% this year over last year, which was nearly a 15% increase over the prior year. Very, very big deal when you're looking at the guy that you're on the board for. Then my staff is here today, and many volunteers I've worked with over the years. You know how I love to have things run right on time, right? Board meetings at the State Fair start and end right on time. And for all of that, I'm very grateful that Troy stepped up when he did. Closest to my heart, his work at the fair in his very first year, his concern wasn't about giving away free tickets for people without means to go to the fair. This idea was floated over and over again. How can we help people get to the fair? It was Troy and his team that put together an adopt-a-family package that this year served 300 families, about the same as last year, not just with fair tickets, but with a parking pass, with food coupons, so that a family could actually go to the fair and have a day of all kinds of other free entertainment and enjoy it. And between us, we put together a plan to distribute those to most of the larger not-for-profits in Onondaga County and several in Oswego County as well. So it wouldn't have happened without it. Troy?
Good morning. You know, before I get started, let me just tell you the State Fair ended Monday. And, you know, you go, as we all know, but you go when you work for the State Fair, you tend to go through it and you tend to live on 4 hours of sleep, and it's great, and you have this adrenaline rush, and you're all compressed. When you come out of it, you hope to decompress, but it takes about a week or so, or maybe a little more, and, you know, with everything going on, it's, and I guess I'm telling you all this as a disclaimer that I haven't had a lot of sleep. So either this is going to go really well, or I'm just going to fall asleep at the podium, and it's not going to go so well. But I want to thank everyone for having me here tonight, this morning, to talk about the State Fair. You know, when Sandra reached out to me before the fair and asked me, I was a little wowed to be invited to speak to the Thursday Morning Roundtable. It's kind of a vaunted group of people in central New York, and the movers and the shakers, and I'm neither of those. But I'm happy to be here to represent the State Fair, and I was humbled to be asked to come here and talk about the State Fair. There's a lot of exciting things happening west of here, and a lot of things that are going to be happening over the next couple of years in terms of investment that the governor's put forth to really change the face of the State Fair, to make it a more productive economic engine in central New York, and just to really grow it, both during the 12 days of the fair, which it's famous for, but those other 50 weeks, you know, that we still have 375 acres that we can do something with. Thank you to Toni Martin for that wonderful introduction. I appreciate it. She's a great member of our board. She gave me way too much credit. She came on the board, and she's chair of our audit committee, which is probably the hardest committee there is. And she's done a wonderful job of getting us to where we need to be. I'd just like to point out, Dave Bullard is back here. He's a wonderful guy. He's been around the Central New York media scene for a long time. We're proud to have him at the State Fair, developing our marketing plans and really getting the State Fair, you know, out there. This morning when I got here, I was thrilled to see a couple people. Joan Christensen, who I haven't seen in years, and it's always good to bump into her, and I knew her when she was assemblywoman. She's just a great person. But just as importantly, a former professor of mine, Elma Boyko, was here, and I haven't seen her in years and years and years. And for better, you have her to blame for either what she taught me or didn't teach me at this point. So, And then, of course, I think Bea is traveling today, but Bea Gonzalez has been on our advisory board since the beginning of the rejuvenated advisory board. She's chair of our outreach committee, and she has said from day one, you've got to change how you market the fair. You've got to make it more diverse. You've got to bring in more diverse acts, more diverse people, and you got to make it a fair for everyone. And we hold that near and dear to our hearts in every decision we make at the fair. You know, just a quick history of the fair. It was founded in 1841. It's the oldest state fair in the country. You know, with the exception of 1942 to 1947, when it was used as a military base for World War II, it has been a continuously operating state fair. The first one was a two-day event that drew about 10 or 15,000 people. You know, it moved around from city to city, New York City, Albany, Elmira, Buffalo, everywhere in between for a number of years, for about 50 years, until it came to its permanent home in Geddes, you know, with a donation of land. And it's been there ever since. 1908 began the first and really only building spurt there was at the state fairgrounds, when the beautiful architectured buildings of the Center of Progress, the Horticulture, the Coliseum, the Dairy Cattle Barn, they all went up during that time period between 1908 and 1923. You know, it's amazing when you look at the Center of Progress building, which is about a 70 or 75,000 square foot building. I think it cost less than $1 million to build, and they put it up in 6 months. There's no way you could ever replicate that in this day and age. You know, but over its history, it's transformed into what it looks like today, you know, with the buildings, with 375 acres, with everything you hear about. Its economic impact between the fair and non-fair is well in excess of $100 million. There's direct spending during the 12 days of the fair of over $70 million. For those 12 days, there's a huge economic impact in Syracuse. And we're, you know, during the non-fair, the other 50 weeks, there's a growing impact that we intend to grow with the new investment that's coming. And I forgot to mention, to answer the first question everybody always asks when you work at the state fair, yes, it's a full-time, year-round job. We employ a staff of about 40 people year-round, most of them in our maintenance and events departments. There's probably less than a dozen and a half people who actually plan the major parts of the fair and the non-fair. One other disclaimer, you know, I'd hoped to put together the PowerPoint during the fair. I ran out of time. I did it last night. I haven't run through it yet, so hopefully it's all right. There we go. You know, I'm not going to read all of this, but this is a mission statement that actually our advisory board put together and reworked for the fair when they took over. I think the most important part of this is, despite, you know, 164, 165 years we've been around, the mission of the state fair has pretty much stayed the same, which is to act as an exposition highlighting everything good about New York, technologically, manufacturing, all of that, but most importantly, it highlights everything agriculture in New York State. It was founded to be a place for farmers and agriculturalists to come, and it remains that way. And we're growing as agriculture grows in New York State, and we're bringing back the promotion of New York State agricultural products, you know, from beef and dairy cows to now distilled spirits, wineries, and craft beer, all of which are in one way, shape, or form an agricultural product. Okay, so how was the 2015 fair? By the numbers, you know, and it's very preliminary. We're still pulling out of all of our numbers. You know, we don't have our revenue numbers and totally done yet. But this kind of gives you a glance at some of the stuff we use just 4 days out from the fair. You know, attendance was down 57,000. Our Chevy Court attendance was up by 100,000. And, you know, that's an important number going forward, because with the grandstand going away after this year's fair, and the paid ticket concerts going to the amphitheater, free entertainment in many ways, and the Chevy Court entertainment is going to be where we live and breathe for the New York State Fair. And you could see this year's fair was a great introduction to that. We booked probably the most diverse set of acts that we've ever had on Chevy Court, and the biggest set of acts. And it shows in the numbers that we went from 175,000 people who attended concerts last year to 283,000 people. That's roughly a third of the fairgoers went to see a concert at Chevy Court. Now, everybody asks, how do you count people at Chevy Court, and are you just making numbers up? Always a good question. We have actually measured out the nooks and crannies of Chevy Court, and we use a per, you know, the average per square per, the average person takes up 3 square feet of space. So we actually go out and we survey that. We look at the crowds. We get in the police towers. We walk the crowds to see how densely populated they are. And it's not an exact science. It's not really an art form either, but you know, it's a best guess estimate at how many people are there. And it's also a comparative estimate because, you know, Steve Miller, you could look out and see there was easily far more people than there were for Nas, which was also an extremely well-attended concert. You know, so the Rainbow Milk Bar stayed flat, which isn't surprising. Last couple of years it's increased, but when it's 90 degrees, probably your drink of choice is not a fresh glass of milk out of the Rainbow Milk Bar. You know, potatoes increased. A lot of that has as much to do with... We introduced sweet potatoes this year, which sold 4,000 or 5,000 potatoes in addition to the regular potatoes. So that increased. And then finally, you know, parking is always a funny number to look at because we were actually ahead through 9 days of the fair over last year, about 700 cars. But if you looked at that number over the last 5 years, it's dropping because more and more people are taking the Central bus, which really, if you're going to the fair, is the best deal in town. Picks you up at one of the many park and rides. I'm now a commercial for Centro. Picks you up at many of the park and rides and delivers you to the front gate of the fair. There we go. Why was attendance down? Well, there's many, many reasons. You know, the one that comes to mind is, there's two that really jump to mind. It was the latest fair we can ever have. September 7th is the latest it can go. And, you know, this year we got into, some schools went back with students, some schools the teachers went back without the students. But all of that begins to affect your attendance, because obviously if you're a teacher, you're not probably coming to the fair during the week when you're going back. The other, never actually got to use a laser pointer. It's kind of fun. The other is, when you look at this, our first weekend was very strong. When you look at the temperatures, it was a reasonable fair weather. It was 70 to 80 degrees. The humidity wasn't that bad. But when you look at the temperatures start going up, you start seeing our numbers drop off. And by the time we reached Labor Day and it was 90 plus degrees with a high heat index, it was not, you know, the state fair by itself is a global warming generator just because of the amount of pavement we have on the fairgrounds. So, you know, some of it's attributed to the hot weather that was there, people not wanting to come, people not wanting to travel in a car, people not wanting to wander around pavement all day long in the hot sun. And then, you know, some of it was probably lack of motivation, some malaise, and, you know, maybe we could have stepped up our marketing plan to address that a little more. But, you know, at the end of the day, and, you know, it's funny, I had this conversation with a reporter yesterday. Attendance is the one number everybody understands. Therefore, we get judged on attendance. It may not be the best evidence of success, but it's the one everybody understands, so it's the one we get judged on in the court of public opinion. You know, we take a much deeper dive beyond attendance. Obviously, we will have many meetings about why attendance was down, but we also do a lot of exit surveys with our vendors and fairgoers to see, you know, customer satisfaction, vendor satisfaction. We do a lot of meetings with constituency groups, from agriculture to local businesses to traveling concessionaires, to see what they noticed, how they felt about the fair. And a lot of the feedback we're getting back initially is, you know, it was a quality fair. You know, it was clean. The garbage was picked up. There was, you know, some initial problems with the bathrooms, which we cleaned up. But for the most part, most vendors and fairgoers, from the feedback we got, thought it was a quality fair. Now, that's really just as important of a measurement as the quantity issue in terms of attendance. But, you know, we're still in the process of getting back our surveys and exit surveys and vendor surveys, and that'll give us a greater picture going forward over the next couple of months about, you know, what we need to change up going into next year. And then, you know, it's, let's see. There, oh, was it a failure? No, there we go. Because we still broke records. You know what? Chevy Court had its largest attendance ever. The Steve Miller Band put on a phenomenal concert. and they had about 36,000, almost 37,000 people. Nas, which is a hip-hop act or old-school rap act, that came in one day before Snoop Dogg canceled us. We managed to fill the spot. He put almost 31,000 people out there, and it was one of our five biggest concerts ever at Chevy Court. You know, R5 set an all-time attendance record for a 2 p.m. concert of 13,500 people. A record number of potatoes were sold, and we had the lowest number of guest relations complaints ever. And believe me, we get a lot of feedback on guest relations, so that's a huge win for us. And then not quite records, but close. Sponsorship increased by 10%. The number of vendors increased to a record number, and RV campsites sold out. And RV campsites, just so you know, because I think some people don't really think about RV campsites at the fair. We sell a large number of them to concessionaires who travel and to the carnival company. We also have a large number of people, mostly local, who come with their RVs and they stay for all 12 days of the fair, enjoy it every day, attend the concerts, wander around the fairgrounds. It's actually we're one of the few fairs that actually open up our RV campsites to the general public, and it's just a great way to involve more and more people into the fair. What was new this year? You know, keeping with our advisory board's mandate and B. Gonzalez's mandate, you know, diversity. So we introduced some new commemorative days. We had a New Americans Day in which almost 100 new Americans were sworn in as citizens. It was a great day, phenomenal event to see folks sworn in as American citizens and then be able to go out and enjoy the fair. We had Pride Day, which was really making an unofficial day an official day. For years, the first Friday of the fair was a gathering of the LGBT community. You know, we pulled everybody together and made it an official day this year. We raised the rainbow flag above the fairgrounds, and it was just, you know, had an evening program, and it was just a great, great day for the fair. Seven Nations Day was really an expansion of Indian Day, and it recognized the long partnership between the Haudenosaunee and the State Fair in terms of their village and everything they've done to really be a strong part of the fair and just grow that partnership. It used to always be concentrated on the west end of the fairgrounds around Indian Village. We brought it out to the entire fairgrounds. We had a Native American acts on at 2 o'clock. With the ripcords, and we also had traditional smoke and hoop dancers on as well. Another great day, and another way to diversify the fair and really grow the partnerships. Then Armed Forces Day. For years, there's always been a Veterans Day, which is very important. We expanded it to Armed Forces Day this year to recognize both veterans and active duty personnel. Then new exhibits and attractions. You know, one of the biggest complaint we always get is about bathrooms. The second biggest complaint we get is usually about traffic, but the growing number of complaints are about horses, believe it or not, because more and more as people bring in their horses, and they're not cheap horses, you know, we have to close off the barn so they can move the horses around and get them ready for their shows. So a lot of people come to the fair and, you know, they want to see the horse, they want to pet the horse, they want to get their picture taken with the horse. And they can't. So what we did is actually set up a new exhibit this year called Equine Avenue. And it really it highlighted the horses each day that were competing in the Coliseum or elsewhere on the grounds, from the draft horses to the minis. And, you know, it really allowed people to come in and talk to the owners, talk to the competitors, talk to the trainers and veterinarians who take care of them, and really get a solid understanding of the importance of our equine industry, it's how it's growing in New York State, and then just the fun stuff of being able to pet the horse and really, you know, to get your picture taken with it, get up close and personal with it. It was a huge success. We're looking at growing it next year. The Star Spangled Challenge, that actually came from a vendor who said, at 9:55, when you guys do the Star Spangled Banner, it's great, it's a nice recorded rendition, you should do it live. So under Dave's tutelage, we actually put out a contest. And, you know, we weren't sure how it would go. You never know how these contests go on YouTube. We had over 250 entries. I mean, probably thousands of votes, Dave. Tens of thousands of votes for the best ones. And then we had 12 live performances over the, you know, one each day over those 12 days. That was just great to hear. If you're on the fairgrounds at 9:55 and you heard a live performance of somebody belting out the Star Spangled Banner, it was truly, in many ways, a magical moment. And it just sounded so much better than just a recorded musical version. You know, Midway rides this year, we grew the Midway to an almost record number of rides with 69 rides. Last year we changed midway vendors after 65 years, I think it was. It was a tough change. Straits had been a part of the fair as long as the fair had had a midway. So it was a tough change. Wade shows came in. They're putting on a good show. They're good to work with. They have good clean rides. And last year when complaints came up about, you know, kids under 36 inches can't ride rides, which is a safety policy, he went out and bought rides so shorter, you know, so younger kids could ride the rides and invested a lot of money in doing it. And then food. This year, you know, food is probably the one thing that gets us the most media attention during the fair. And this year we had everything from healthy to heart attack with vegan. And then the defibrillator burger, which if you hadn't heard about it, was a half-pound burger deep-fried with deep-fried pickles, deep-fried onions, cheese. The best part, it was shoved between two grilled cheese sandwiches. I ate about this much of one, and I like to eat. It was just a little too much goodness packed into one thing. You know, just looking at the fair, and you know, we always get the question, what sets you apart from a county fair? What sets you apart from the Erie County Fair? What sets you apart from the Biggie up in New England? You know, one of the things we've done is we hold as much as we hold near and dear to our agricultural mission, it'll always be the biggest part of the fair because it was the state fair was created for farmers and for agriculturalists. You know, you also have to be able to draw people in through other means, and it's become as much of a musical fest and food festival as it has a state fair in some ways. You know, and that's where I think sets us apart. We put $1.5 million into our Chevy Chord Entertainment, and that is a huge investment to make in free concerts, but you can see it pay off, and it's going to have to pay off more and more as the grandstand goes away. And the other part of this is, you know, with 200 to 300 food vendors, and we're always looking to diversify those food vendors, is, you know, you can literally bring people on. They can see, milk the cow, milk the goat, throw a hay bale, you know, eat a deep fried food, get a vegan milkshake, and sit and listen to two major concerts a day. In many ways, that's what's setting us apart from other state fairs and other large county fairs. So what's next? Apparently not the slide. Ah, there we go. The before and what will be the after. You know, I put these two photos up here. This was a Google satellite shot from 1994. This is from 2014. You can see virtually nothing has changed in that 20 years. And you could go back farther and farther, and you could see the fairgrounds has remained virtually unchanged for the last 50 years, which is both good and bad. But there's been no major improvements or capital facilities. And the only real investment has been to keep the status quo, to keep the water running, the toilets flushing, the roofs, you know, not leaking. So, you know, Governor Cuomo recognized that, and he said, you know, you need to step up your game, State Fair. You need to be able to really put on a better show, a bigger show, a show that really draws people in, and a show that really reflects the New York of tomorrow and not the New York of yesterday. And that's in terms of everything from technology to agriculture, which are closely entwined. And this is the comprehensive plan we've come up with. And as you can see, it dramatically changes the face of the fair. You know, we've worked with, it takes down the grandstand, which last year, you know, was predestined by the building of the amphitheater, and all of our paid concerts will go over there. It takes out the track, and we've worked with Dirt Week, which is also an institution in Central New York, to relocate to another facility in Central New York, so it remains an institution in Central New York. But when we did that, it freed up 70-plus acres of land, roughly a third of our total land on the fairgrounds proper, that we can repurpose, make it more walkable, put up more buildings, make more usable space for vendors, and more importantly, for exhibitors, for educational exhibits and other exhibits. And, you know, it greens the fairgrounds as well. You know, if you've ever been at the fairgrounds, after it rains, everything becomes lakefront property there. There's no real means of stormwater drainage, because it's 100 plus years old in some sections. They're undersized. They're a lot of the same problems the city is having. You know, they're undersized, they're old, and they need to be updated. And then there's just no grass. There's no trees. There's no shaded area. So when it's 91 degrees, who wants to come to the fair and walk on pavement when it's hard to find a shade tree? And, you know, that's a lot of what we put into this plan is changing it up. So you take the hard edges off. So you use more green infrastructure to be able to catch the rainwater and repurpose it. So you put, you know, all of this takes that into account. It's a more walkable community. It's set up like a village streets with blocks and roads and sidewalks and everything. It also takes into account a lot of pedestrian issues we have along State Fair Boulevard, where it's hard to cross the road or there's no sidewalks once you cross the road. Can't remember what my next slide is. Okay, let's go back for a second. Or not. There we go. The entire plan is really, in addition to the greening and landscaping, it calls for a new Chevy Court. As I said, it's a growing part of the fairgrounds. It includes a new full-service RV park. The RV park we have in the infield is serviceable. I wouldn't call it full service. This will actually be totally up to health code, building code, and everything else. It'll have water, sewer, electric, and it'll actually be a functioning RV park. It includes where the part of the track was building. These are the old racing stables. It includes refurbishing those stables. And if you've ever been in there, they are absolutely beautiful pieces of architecture. They have an old exercise rotunda for the horses. It is truly a beautiful facility that has had no money put into it in years and years and years. So we plan on refurbishing all of that. Includes a new realigned midway. If you've ever walked on the midway, starts out at about 400 foot at its widest point and narrows by the time you get to the poultry building to about 50 to 75 foot. It's an odd-shaped triangle that's very difficult to really expand the midway or expand the rides or expand the carnival end of the fair. This will actually realign it, make it symmetrical, and add about three and a half acres to the total midway. It's also important, this will include drainage, this will include utilities that are needed, none of which are included in the current midway. It includes a new 110,000 square foot expo building, which is really flex space that we need on the fairgrounds to accommodate growing shows that are there already, to accommodate large horse shows, the John Madden-style horse shows that we will be able to put on, along with the new equine facilities, the covered rings, the stabling areas that are part of this plan right here and here. And, you know, we consulted with John in putting some of this plan together because we have great horse shows now. We want those horse shows to grow. And there's a lot of horse shows that we can draw in, which are Can-Am shows or medium-sized international or invitation shows that we'll have a shot at bringing. And yeah, I don't think when we first put this plan out, and I'm one of those people who actually reads the comments on Syracuse.com. Don't ask me why. The people kept saying, well, what's a horses? Big deal. What you have to realize with horses is they bring a lot of people. I think for each horse, three or four people come into the community with that horse, the rider, the trainer, the people who take care of it. And those people spend money on their horses. And they spend money at the markets they're in. They take hotel rooms. They take RV spaces. They go out to eat. And they spend a lot of money locally while they're here. And there is a huge number of horse shows that we can go after and bring here that will generate a lot of local spending. And then a lot of the other is, I don't want to call it cosmetics because it's important, but it's putting in grass areas, it's putting in sidewalks, it's putting in rational walking and walking paths and sidewalks and ways to get from one point to the other. There are various points on the fairgrounds where if you walk to what we call Times Square, which is where this tower is, you're pretty much stuck at that point. You either go right or left because you can't go any farther forward. And this will just create a whole new dynamic of pushing people around the fairgrounds and allowing them to find their way so that the west end of the fairgrounds isn't any longer known as the dead end of the fairgrounds. It will allow people to get there in a means that's, you know, resting, that's walking, that's shaded, that's everything you want to get to the other end of the fairgrounds. So where does it start? A new front gate. That's our front door. The vast, vast majority of our patrons pass through that door. It's old. It's poorly designed. It's, quite frankly, ugly. It's barely ADA compliant, and it has none of the technology we need for modern ticketing system and electronic ticketing. this just builds up the suspense. Here is the, you know, a rendering of the gate we will be building, and it's very reminiscent of the old carriage gate that was at the fairgrounds. The idea is to wow people when they walk in the fairgrounds. And, you know, it'll be technologically new, but architecturally reminiscent of the original gates on the fairgrounds, the stone archways, you know, the walking paths to get through. It'll be ADA compliant. It'll meet all the current building codes, and it'll be wired for everything we need for modern ticketing systems. And then here's a basic rendering of the new expo center we're planning. And once again, the idea is to build it in such a way that it fits in with the other buildings, so it's just not stuck there like a sore thumb. It'll be same color scheme, same building type materials, same palettes and all, and everything you want. That plus it'll provide 110,000 square feet of new modern climate controlled space that we really could use on the fairgrounds, both during the fair, but also during the non-fair, which we're really looking to grow our non-fair business. And let me say, we're looking to grow that non-fair business without competing with the On Center or the SRC Arena or the Landmark or any of the local facilities. And, you know, we have a great partnership with the county executive. And, you know, when we talked to her about this project, because she's been a huge supporter of ours, you know, she made it clear not to compete with county facilities or to complement county facilities and bring in new shows and different shows that'll help the Central New York economy as a whole. Chevy Court, our mainstay, built somewhere in the 1960s. I think it was 63, 64, somewhere in there. At the time, it was probably a modern marvel of technology for the concerts they were having. Now it's slightly outdated. And there's a lot we build onto it. That's the basic of the stage. We add onto the stage. We add loading docks. We actually add about 10 or 15 feet onto the front of it. And the biggest problem we have, or one of the biggest problems we have, is the roof on it is not constructed to hold the production the concerts today have. You know, people carry their own production when you're a band. It's lights, it's sound, it's video boards, it's everything you can imagine. And when you hang them from the ceiling, we just don't have the capability to be able to do that. And this is just a pretty artistic rendering, but at the end of the day, the new facility will be able to hold all the it'll be built to modern specs. It'll be able to hold modern production. It'll have a backstage area that's big. I mean, right now when, you know, you're Bruno Mars and you walk into our backstage area, you're probably thinking, where in the heck did I just come into? This will have modern catering facilities, modern restrooms, modern showers, modern waiting rooms for the acts. And we'll also be able to add safety and security. And, you know, I often get into a debate with the state police about the safety of Chevy Court because they look at 36,000 people and think you're insane. I look at 36,000 people and think, thank God. But there is a lot of modern security that we can put into a new and redesigned Chevy Corps that'll keep aisleways open, that'll make sure EMS can get to the middle of the crowd, that, you know, with cameras, new cameras, as well as just new entryways. And, you know, right now, last year, our total attendance was 280,000. We think by increasing the size and bringing bigger and bigger acts, you know, we can continue to increase that to probably over 400,000 people attending concerts as time goes on. And also during the non-fair, you know, we do K-Rock, we do Dysfunctional Family Barbecue, we do some other acts on Chevy Court. You know, we also see it as a great way to partner with the county, with their amphitheater, for the possibility of holding large music festivals where you need multiple stages, where you need camping, where you need other buildings for vendors and the like. The midway, you can see this odd-shaped triangle I was talking about, and it'll be turned into a 16 acres facility for the midway, which will allow us to continue to expand rides and increase midway revenue. Right now, the midway gross last year set a record at just shy of $3 million. It shattered our old record by about $800,000. Now, what that means to the fair is we take, I believe, overall about 43% of the midway gross. So it's a significant piece of revenue for us that really doesn't cost us a lot of money at the end of the day, but it helps fund our agricultural programs and other pieces of the exposition. And it also more importantly, we obviously use this for parking during the non-fair. We're getting more and more into hosting RV rallies. The new Midway will be conducive to all of that because it'll have drainage, it'll have sanitary and electric and water hookups underneath it, so we can actually continue to hold the Good Sam type rallies, which the last time Good Sam was here, three years ago, I believe. They brought somewhere around 4,000 campers with them who stayed for a weekend in Syracuse and shopped at our shops and ate in our restaurants and really enjoyed themselves. And probably for many of them, the first time they visited Syracuse, and they left with a good feeling for it. These are our equine facilities. They're outdated and unusable for the most part. This doesn't include the Coliseum, which is a gorgeous building, but also needs a certain amount of work to hold newer and more modern horse shows. But it's kind of reminiscent of a lot of the buildings on the fairgrounds in that they haven't had any money put into them in the last few years. I promise there's a really pretty picture after this. There we go. You know, in addition to the Expo Center, which one of the big uses of it will be as an equine center, we're also going to be building new outdoor rings and new covered rings to complement the horse shows and to be able to grow the current horse shows we have. You know, the covered rings are great because horse people don't really care if it's pouring down rain. As long as they're covered, they'll still show their horses and they'll still come in and have a good time. And, you know, when we get done, we've converted the DVM barn, which is the smaller of the two major horse barns. We put in all new stabling there. We're looking at gutting the main horse barn and doing all new stabling there. And we've already seen the plus of that is, you know, during the fair we do a 6-horse hitch, which is the most popular horse show during the fair. Packs the Coliseum with 3,000 people. It's the big draft horses and Percherons, and they have the gorgeous wagons. We had three big teams that came back to compete with us again because we'd finally redone the stables. They refused to put their horses into some of our stables in the DVM barn, and when they heard we redid it, they came back. And we're hearing that with a lot of horse shows. A lot of people were afraid to compete at the fair because of the stabling and fear of safety for their horses are coming back because we're starting to make major investment in our fairgrounds. And the New York experience, which is a somewhat undefined area, but it's going to take up a certain amount where the track used to be back by our racing stables. And the idea there is to create a festival grounds, number one, but a place where we can really highlight New York State and what New York State is doing, for, you know, from the past to the future. And, you know, part of that may be a period farm. Part of that may be test plots for new crops that are coming out. Part of it may be apple trees, hops, and grapevines, where you can really show people what is grown in New York State. I mean, I have my own dream is to create a part of an urban garden there and get Cooperative Extension and Urban Delights and some of those other groups there to take care of it for us and to really be involved in it, and then allow them to sell the fruits and produce that are sold there. But it's going to be a great area where we can really highlight everything that's New York. And it's right off the Midway, so we'll be able to draw people to it. And during the non-fair, you know, it's just a great festival grounds. It's great open space for running for concerts or any number of other things. The basic timeline is somewhere around November 1st, we're going to begin demolition at the fairgrounds. Around March 1st or March 15th, construction is going to begin. And then by July 8th to July 12th, the majority of the first phase of the work will be done because we have to have done in time for the Nationals. The first phase is basically everything but the expo building and equine facilities. So it's the new front gate, the new Chevy Court, the new Midway, the new New York experience, a lot of parking improvements and pedestrian improvements, streetscaping along State Fair Boulevard and the interior of the fairgrounds. And then just a lot of other, we're doing some major utility work down Restaurant Row, which is where most of the sewage and rainwater flows. And all of that will be done by July 8th for move into the Nationals, the RV park as well. And then after the 2016 fair, we'll begin construction on the Expo building and equine facilities, and those will be done by July of 2017. And then don't forget, the fair next year is August 25th to September 5th. Any questions?
Yeah, well, last question first. So how many days until the next fair?
Oh, God.
Countdown, Dave. No, oh, boy.
300 and something.
Clyde knows. Okay. Well, you're going to be really busy between now and then. Anyway, whenever it is. All right.
A question. Wouldn't this material be available on your website?
Good question. Who will be available? We'll start putting the information up on our website probably later this week and early next, so you can go through it. We also have a master plan, obviously a written master plan that's coming along with an economic analysis that's finished up. That won't be published until later this month.
The naturalization ceremony during New Americans Day was just wonderful, and I believe included free admission for the people being American citizens. Will that continue next year, the ceremony at the Empire Room?
Our goal is to continue that as an annual tradition at the fair, and it was, you know, it was great, and it gave people, you know, it was just great doing a swearing-in ceremony during the fair. There's something heartfelt about it, but it also gives these people who are sworn in a chance to go out and really experience Americana and experience the state fair.
Do you mind coming around here so we can see you?
A comment on a question. The comment, I was at the state fair this year twice at very different times of day. I've never seen it so clean.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Markedly clean. The question, I was with a friend on Skinny Atlas Lake last week. We sat at the edge of the water, and he pointed out to it and said, you know, during the state fair time, the water level dropped 6 inches. Can you comment on that?
So this was an expert. You believe what he said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we used to draw our water from the city of Syracuse, which I believe uses Skinny Atlas Lake as its aquifer. We no longer draw any water from the city of Syracuse. We draw it all from Aqua. And I'm not sure. I thought they got their water from Lake Ontario. So I'm not sure at this point why we would be lowering the Skinny Atlas Lake water.
All right.
First, my son got his first job this summer working at the lemonade stand, and that was a great experience for him. Second, the addition of Strong Hearts I thought is fantastic because that's where I ate every time I went. And third, I volunteered at the New York State Arborist booth, and I've been doing that for 12 years. And we were remarking how little we pay, and we know that vendors right around the corner are paying.
Don't tell them.
But what we're doing is answering questions of the public, and we're very grateful to New York State Arborists that we get to do this every year. It gets arborists from all over the state come volunteer for either all day or in the evening, and people ask us, we talk to hundreds of people every day, and it's a great experience. Will that continue to be in the Hort building with the redesign?
Absolutely. We're not looking at shifting, you know, other than you know, the ShamWow vendors and the as seen on TV vendors. We're probably not going to be shifting a lot of vendors. You know, Arborist falls into kind of our agricultural mission. And it's, we're not looking to shift any of our agricultural components. We're looking to grow those components, so they'll remain in the horticulture building.
We went twice this year, but we entered through gate 12, and the maps are hidden at gate 12, and if people are coming out, you don't see them. And we were looking for one particular thing, and we could not find it. We walked the fair twice. But my suggestion is, because we were asking all over, that you put an info booth behind the dairy building, kind of in the center where King David's gyro is. A lot of people are there, and there needs to be more than one at the front gate for people who are looking for something.
Yeah, that's a good point. We do put one at the front gate, and then we also put one farther back, kind of across from the Gianelli stand. Mm-hmm. That said, you know, you could always use more.
Mm-hmm. Well, you need an app, actually, is what you need. There you go.
We actually have have an app now. You can download it.
All right. Sorry. Okay. Maybe we should have, at the end, we'll ask, okay, who went to the fair more than 2 times this year? Well, all right, Diane, Linda.
All right, I got to ask this. You've got two history museums out at the fairgrounds, the Ag Museum and the Carriage Museum. There have been some improvements at the Ag Museum over the last couple of years, not so much at the Carriage Museum. Any thoughts with this new plan on those two facilities?
You know, honestly, they're not part of this plan because $50 million doesn't go as far as it used to. But we recognize the need to up our game at the museum. You know, obviously the buildings aren't climate controlled, neither the Carriage or the Whittier Museum, and causes damage to a lot of those. We have talked to the Whittier Museum board because they've expressed some interest in kind of shedding themselves of some of the duplicate carriages and everything. Because right now you walk in and it's just a... It's almost an overabundance of carriages. I mean, they're beautiful, but and it's a great attraction. So we've been working closer and closer with them to address their concerns. You know, they are a chartered museum, and we're supposed to be providing a certain level of care to everything there. So it's not part of the $50 million, but it's part of our ongoing budgeting process, I guess.
Thank you.
So I only made it to the fair twice this year. We love the fair. My question is, though, Do your plans include more improved signage? Because I know that you probably want me to spend money in the Midway, but I might lose my mind in the Midway and leave the fair entirely. So if there could be some more signage for getting the heck out of the Midway, I'd appreciate it.
Actually, part of our budget for the $50 million does include new signage, waypoints, standardizing all the signage on the fairgrounds, so it makes sense, yes.
Okay. I wanted to share that the first time I came to Syracuse, probably as maybe a 10-year-old, was to the fair. And for many years, until I started looking at colleges, I thought that was Syracuse. Okay, Syracuse is the fair, that's it.
Hi, I've probably attended the fair every year for well over 60 years. I love the fair. I've done exhibits. I've managed them and worked a lot. But every year I usually go in and I thought, oh, not to worry about money, because there's always the ATMs. Yeah. But I do want to ask, and I went in and I had two things that struck me, because it's always been Salve Bank or a local bank. So I was a little disturbed to see South Carolina. And I have family in South Carolina, but I still didn't want the Bank of South Carolina. But then the other thing, normally, you know, your average cost for an ATM is like $2, maybe $2.53 at the max. I was a little shocked at the $3.85. So it was like, are we intending to bring back a local bank? So,
well, you know, as a state institution, we have to comply with the procurement laws that are out there. So we put it... You put it out there, and we cannot discriminate based on jurisdiction. So we have the same problem, I don't know. We have the same issue with the Empire Room. It's an out-of-state company doing it. Part of the problem, first of all, Salve Bank didn't put in a proposal when we put it out for a 5-year contract. Second part is Carolina had a lower fee than the other company that put it in, and they paid us more. So when you combine those two things, it's unfortunately we don't have a lot of flexibility when it comes to the procurement guidelines. But I hear you, because I have other people who've expressed similar concern about Solvay Bank.
I know you have improved the ADA. Can you tell us something about how improvements have been made and what you expect to make?
Our goal is to provide ADA compliant access to all the buildings. We've started that with the Science and Industry Building, the Dairy Products Building. We're actually going to probably begin ripping out these stairs at the COP by the restaurant to put in new stairs and compliant ramps there. And then we're going to start looking at the side entrances. We're hitting the major buildings first, because for us to put in a stair with ramp is roughly $250,000 or $300,000. So we're working our way around the core, and then we're going to expand it outward. Part of the $50 million is obviously going to be tearing up a lot of pavement and replacing it, which will get rid of a lot of the trip and fall hazards, a lot of the hard part of pushing people around in wheelchairs. Let me say, when my mother comes to the fair, she comes in a wheelchair. She's disabled. So believe me, I know how hard it is in some of those buildings and roadways to push people around in a wheelchair. All of our new buildings will also be built to code and ADA compliant code. We work a lot with Arise locally. We meet with them before and after the fair to try to address any issues they have about concert seating for ADA, deaf and hard of hearing sections, and then as well as to address buildings. We're actually working with another group whose name escapes me right now to do a full ADA study of the fairgrounds, and so we can really get together a better prioritized list of where we should be hitting first.
Your turn. It's my turn.
Good morning, Troy.
Good morning.
I was at the fair 4 times.
All right.
No, she's more. But anyway, I like everything that's been done thus far. The bathrooms are much brighter, much cleaner. The hand dryers are great. But young people, young children, there need to be more rides for them. I know you put some more in, but my grandson went out there, and my daughter bought a wristband. She said he only had 5 rides to ride on. So he did them all over and over and over again. That's not a good thing. Okay, so
yep.
If you can do that, that would be great.
Absolutely.
The other thing is I really appreciate the diversity of the acts this year. Wonderful. Please continue to do that.
Absolutely.
There are some ideas that we've been floating around about some things you can do differently going forward, and I'd like to be part of that conversation if that's possible.
Oh, we'd love you to be part of that conversation, Linda.
I know you're not going to do this probably, but the Chevy Court, if there's some way to put something over it when you're sitting out there in that hot sun, I couldn't stay Labor Day. I left. I didn't have an umbrella. I had nothing to cover me. I had my hat on, of course, but it's awful. It's brutal out there.
We have our first kind of design meeting on Chevy Corps this afternoon in the redesign. But one of the things we're going to talk about is that mesh type netting you can put up, at least on a temporary basis, to try to shade it out. I mean, we have issues with sight lines, but if we can get it high enough and kind of block out a lot of things, believe me, I hear you. And we obviously passed out water because it was getting so hot on a couple of those days, but it gets way, way too hot out there.
That sounds like a great idea.
I'm not sure if acting director is like practicing attorney. But can you tell me what the thinking of Ag and Markets is with regards to your title?
The question about Skinny Atlas Lake was easier. You know, let me tell you a little bit about my history at the fair. I've been at the fair for 6 years. 4 of those years I was assistant director. The last 2 I've been acting director. Whatever decisions get made about my future, here's one thing I know, they're out of my hands, and you know, it's made by people with much higher pay grades than myself. I love the fair. I think we have a great team at the fair, and we've been doing well, and I think, not to say it wasn't true under other administrations, but I think we're very open to ideas and suggestions and meeting with people and taking to heart the things we read on Syracuse.com to make improvements. I think we're doing a great job, but the decision of acting director versus firing me is made well beyond me. But thank you.
That's good. So you're going to be really busy with the construction, but as part of your fall or early spring, whenever other states have state fairs, do you travel? Going to Texas or, I don't know, Oklahoma or I don't know.
We travel a little bit on our own to the Big E once every other year or so. Oddly enough, you know, there is no budget for us to travel to other state fairs, but there's also, we're a member of the International Association of Fairs and Expositions, and each year they do a major conference and just after Thanksgiving, and it's in Las Vegas, and it's a great conference because the meetings we have or the issues we have are not unique to us by any stretch of the imagination, and you could really learn about a lot about the issues, whether it's security or agriculture or any of the other issues faced out there, by going to this meeting, and we're not even allowed to go to that.
Well, or else I was thinking, I've never been there, but I've heard that Disney World is a place where,
Disney World.
People, as far as that, or I think the idea of the park-like setting is great. If, you know, the green grass and trees will make people happy, right? They do everywhere. Right, Steve?
So I'm not going to stand because I sprained my ankle yesterday.
Not at the fair, right?
And I was at the fair twice. One of those days was on Women's Day when Planned Parenthood was one of the sponsors. And I would just like to publicly thank you for your help that day.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, if you need any letters of recommendation, Troy, I think you can find some in this group. So thanks very much, Troy Waffner.
Thank you very much.